right, let's see, is the microphone working? Everybody hear me okay at this level? I'm able to speak much louder if you need me to, so just let me know. I'm used to teaching classes and needing to speak very loud. Well, thank you for coming today. I appreciate the invitation. Along the way, if you have questions or have comments, feel free to just speak up and add in. I hope to make this somewhat interactive, and my goal is that when I'm done today, that hopefully you will leave with at least one thing that you'll think about maybe doing differently to help you reduce the risk for falls, because we know how critical falls can be. And if you are at all staying in contact with the news, you probably see all the time statistics and articles about how to reduce fall risk and the various things that you can do to reduce your chance for falls. And some of those are really easy steps, and some are a little bit more complex to do. So what I'm going to do is really break down those five key factors for reducing fall risk. I will mention that on a table across by the exit there, I have a variety of handouts, and one of the handouts that I have, it's a green sheet of paper, really summarizes what I'm talking about here today. So if you don't want to take notes, you can have that, and then you don't have to take notes with it. But what I'm going to do is break down each of these five key areas for reducing fall risk and talk about them in more detail. But those five areas being education, fall risk screening, medications management, having a safe environment, and then balance and exercise as, although the last item not necessarily the least important of those last items. So when we talk about red light is not on. Oh, no, there it is. It's back. Oh, batteries. Okay, so when we talk about education, the first thing is knowing what the risk factors for falls are. And then once you know what those risk factors are, it's really going through and identifying what are your potential risk factors or what are the risk factors that you may already have. And then once you know what your risk factors are, it's then looking at what are the resources that are available to you to help you reduce those risk factors. And then ultimately, you have to take action. If you just hope that maybe those risk factors will go away, they're not. You're going to have to take action on your own or get support from others to help you reduce what those risks are that are in your life. This list I have of risk factors is not a comprehensive list, unfortunately. There are a lot of risk factors for what can contribute to falls. But as we look at this, think about what are some of these that maybe apply to you, or if you have loved ones that apply to your loved ones that you can maybe help. For women, especially Caucasian women, over 80, our risk factor is the greatest. And the reason it's Caucasian women is generally because of bone structure. Asian women are also at a higher risk for falls because of a higher risk for developing osteoporosis. And so osteoporosis is when our bones become more brittle and fragile. So when we have osteoporosis, that increases our risk for falls.
because you just don't have the strength. You may break a bone. That in itself can contribute to a fall. And then, of course, if an individual's bone density is low and they do have a fall, the risk of a much greater injury and a more challenging time recovering from that is there. So foot problems, if you have bunions, if you have neuropathy in your feet, so a loss of sensation in your feet, those are the types of foot problems that can contribute to falls. Because if your feet hurt, or if you're having difficulty wearing shoes that are good, stable shoes, you're not going to walk as normally, and that's going to increase your risk for falls. And then medications, and we're going to get more into detail about medication in a little bit. If you're having difficulty doing daily activities, self-care type items, showering, dressing, so forth, you're at a higher risk for falls. So the list goes on and on here, unfortunately, because there are so many things that can contribute to fall risk. So you can see depression down towards the end of this list. Why do you think depression would contribute to fall risk? Anybody have any thoughts about that? Well, it's when we're depressed, we tend to bring the world inward. We're not as aware of what's going on around us because we're kind of coming inward, dealing with our pain and our depression. And so when you kind of tune out the world around you, you're less noticing what is in front of you, and so you are more likely to trip. So when you're depressed, your attention, your outward attention, diminishes. And then generally you tend to maybe be less active, not going out as much, and the less active you are, so the last one being sedentary, the less active you are, your strength is going to decrease and the greater your risk for falls. So once you've identified what your risk factors are, then you want to get screened for identifying, are those risk factors something that can be taken care of? And the first point of contact is using your primary care physician. Many times when people have falls, they're afraid to tell family members, they're afraid to tell their physician that they've had a fall. And generally that fear is because you're concerned that people are maybe going to take some of your independence away from you. Oh, so-and-so fell, they're not able to take care of themselves anymore. You know, we're going to change their environment. So it's very important that you do tell your physician if you've had a fall. Falls are normal. We all fall. I mean, think about throughout your life, things happen and we all have falls. However, falls are not a normal part of aging. And people do tend to think, well, as I get old, I'm going to fall. A fall is not a normal part of aging. Your chance of having a fall increases as you age. But don't just say, well, I'm older, therefore I'm going to fall. There's a lot that can be done to reduce that chance of having falls. So you want to talk to your doctor if you do have a fall, because they can help direct you towards resources that may reduce some of your fall risk. See a podiatrist if you have foot issues. You want to get foot issues taken care of so that in itself can reduce your fall risk if you are having foot problems. Getting a balance assessment. If you feel like you are having balance challenges or you've had falls, you want to get a balance assessment to determine what impairments you might have going on. And there are multiple resources within town where you can do that. At the hospital in the building that we have that's behind the main inpatient hospital, it's called the Health and Performance Center. So it's just right over Foremaster, on the other side of Foremaster. We have a wonderful outpatient physical therapy group that is our neurobalance center. They can do balance assessments and do one-on-one physical therapy treatment for people that have balance impairments. In the LiveWell Center, where I work and I teach classes, we do balance assessments, and we have a number of different types of balance assessments that we can administer based on what the individual's situation is. And then we have balance classes, and I'll talk about those more in a little bit. So there are various places where you can get balance assessments, and that can also help you understand where some of the impairments are that you have and what resources might be available to you. Getting your vision checked on a regular basis is important. Our vision is the most important sensory system our body uses to help us maintain our balance. And that is because our vision is giving us information about the world that's around us. And we need to see what's going on around us to avoid obstacles that may trip us up, may cause a fall. So make sure that you are maintaining good vision health, and that if you need corrective lenses, you get appropriate corrective lenses. Now, with that said, corrective lenses can actually contribute to fall risk. If you have bifocals or trifocals or progressives, those can add a challenge because you may have some depth perception issues dealing with those transitions. So for somebody who maybe has had multiple falls and is at a greater risk for falls, it may be more appropriate for them not to have trifocals or potentially even bifocals, but instead to have multiple glasses and you change them out given what the setting and need is that you have at that moment. If you are wearing bifocals or trifocals, which of course many do as we age, have that awareness that that can become an impairment for you and put you at higher risk for falls. So be aware when you're in certain settings, if you're going up and down stairs, that your depth perception may be impacted as you are managing a stair and having a misstep there. And then vitamin D. Vitamin D is sort of the Cinderella right now of supplements, and there's tremendous research that's been done on vitamin D as it relates to fall risk reduction. Individuals that are clinically low in their vitamin D levels. And so by clinically low, that is getting a blood test that identifies that your blood levels of vitamin D are low. There's been quite a bit of research that has shown that that increases your risk for falls. So if your vitamin D levels are low, you want to get supplemented with that appropriately so that it reduces your fall risk. Now, if you do not have clinically low levels of vitamin D, if you're within the normal range for your vitamin D levels, taking vitamin D supplements have not been shown to reduce fall risk. So I'm going to kind of restate that. If you have clinically low levels of vitamin D, supplementation reduces your fall risk. But if your levels are within normal, just taking vitamin D in itself does not reduce your fall risk. So the question is, does that include men as well as women? Yes. So the studies have been done on men and women. It's vitamin D is hard for us to get from our diet. We mostly get it through sunlight. And, of course, we do live in an area here where we do get a lot of sunlight. So certainly people that live in climates where they have many months with limited sunlight are at greater risk. But also because we're much more cautious about using sunblock and wearing clothing that protects us from the sun, many people are at low levels with their vitamin D. So I just like to encourage people that when you do go for your, hopefully you go for an annual wellness exam, And if they do blood work, that you ask your physician to have your blood work check your vitamin D levels, because it's not always a routine part of what is checked with your blood work. So sometimes you do need to ask your physician to make sure that they order that as part of that. So moving into one of those additional key factors for reducing fall risk is medications. Medications is a huge part of what you can do to help manage your fall risk. The more medications an individual takes, the greater their risk for falls. If you look at the fact sheets that come with your prescription medications, and you read the millions of potential side effects with the medications, almost all medications you will see dizziness show up as a potential side effect. Not all, but it's a very, very high percentage of prescription medications you'll see dizziness or confusion. And if you take multiple medications, you can create this compounding effect. So one medication, your body may be able to manage that okay in terms of the side effects. You may not feel the dizziness. But the more you take, the greater the risk is for interaction of those medications to heighten the risk of dizziness or confusion. And certainly dizziness is going to contribute to fall risk. Medications that affect your blood pressure can increase your fall risk. If you are taking medications to try to reduce your blood pressure, which many, many older adults are taking, you may have something that is called hypotension. And so hypotension would be your blood pressure is low, and it's a positional hypotension. And so positional meaning when you go from a reclining position or a seated position to standing up, it takes a little bit longer for your blood pressure to adjust and to get the blood flowing back up to your brain. So if you get a little bit dizzy when you stand up, whether it's because of medication or just that's an issue that you have going on, certainly that dizziness increases your risk for falls. What I often hear from people when they've had a fall is that they've stood up quickly. You know, maybe their phone rings or there's something going on that causes them to get up quickly. They stand up and they turn, and the next thing they know, they're on the ground and they don't even remember feeling themselves fall. And oftentimes that is a factor of that their blood pressure has not regulated enough yet and they moved too quickly. So it's really good if you are experiencing some of that to really train yourself that when you get up, stand for a moment. Just give yourself a couple of seconds for your blood pressure to regulate, making sure you're getting good blood flow up to the brain, and that you're not feeling dizziness before you move. It's worth letting the phone call go to voicemail potentially than it is dealing with a fall and injuries associated with that. The other thing you have to be really careful is if you are taking supplements, over-the-counter supplements or over-the-counter medications, those can interact with your prescription medications and, again, can exacerbate the side effects that you have from those. Oftentimes, people don't think about how much supplements can have drug interactions. And beyond just falls, the interactions with supplements and medications lead to thousands and thousands of deaths every year, and usually it is in older adults that happens to. We have a wonderful resource in the LiveWell Center that is, we call it part of our LiveWell Learning Hub. And the resource we have is a medical research librarian, and one of the services that she does for free, and emphasize that again, she does it for free, is you can give her a list of all of the medications and supplements you take. And we would encourage you, if you're doing this, that you be very thorough with that list over-the-counter medications, supplements, and prescription medications. And she will put all of that information into a program that she has and email you a report that will identify any interactions that may occur between any of those. Also, if there's potential food interactions. So there are certain prescription medications where you either need to take it with food or not with food, or there's certain foods that you shouldn't be taking with certain medications. So that service is available to anybody in the community. You do not have to be a client of the LiveWell Center to take advantage of that service. And so one of the items that I brought with me today that is on the back table there is a flyer that says LiveWell Learning Hub, and on the back side of it, it lists all of the different free services that are offered through our Learning Hub, and one of those is the medication and supplement tracker. And on it, it has the name, the phone number, and the email address of our medical research librarian. So you can call her or you can email her and ask her if she would do the drug medication supplement tracker for you. Yes. So the question is, what is done with that information? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So what she, yeah. So the question is, what's done with it, and is it going to go anywhere else? So when she does that, it's not actually attached to your medical record. It's just a program that she plugs the information into. It generates a report that she emails to you, and then once she's emailed it to you, she does not retain it. So it is not a retained record. It's not something where if you did it and then you added something new, that 6 months later you could email her and say, here's one more medication I have to add to the list. You would have to give her the whole list again. So that's how that's done. That answer your question? Okay. All right. So what I want to move on to now is the next category, which is creating a safe home. Most falls happen in or around our home. Why do you think that is? That's where we spend most of our time, right? So the place where we spend most of our time, that's where we're most likely to have our falls occur. This is a category that you have significant control over reducing your fall risk in, or getting help to reduce your fall risk with. So this is an area, I said, I hope that you'll take at least one thing away from this presentation today to help you. And this is an area that's an easy one to do, is to go home and start looking around your home and saying, what can I do in my home to make it a safer environment? So securing loose items. If you have area rugs, That's a high-risk area that people end up getting on an area rug and it moves underneath them. A couple years ago, went to somebody's home here. I was asked if I could go out and take a look at their home. And this was an older couple, and the gentleman had multiple falls. And they had in their bathroom the typical types of area rugs that we get for the bathroom, the one that goes around the base of the toilet and in front of the tub and the shower and the sinks. And it was the type where it has the rubber backing that's attached to it. And I peeled up those area rugs, and what happens to that rubber after a couple of years? Gets as hard as a rock. And so you take one rock, one hard surface, and you put it on top of another surface, and it becomes slick. So that rubber was no longer doing its job. They were very, very slick. So that was a really easy one. We started by just getting all of those rugs out of their bathroom, and if they wanted to add them back in, they needed to go buy new ones. So if you have those types of rugs, check the bottom of them. See if you need to replace them. They're not very expensive. It's a lot more expensive to recover from an injury after you've been hospitalized for it than it is to replace some area rugs. And ideally would be you minimize the number of area rugs that you have if you are having mobility challenges. Eliminate the clutter. Watch for cords that are loose. Do you have stacks of books? Do you have other things that are on the floor that are going to be easy trip hazards for you? And move those or get somebody to move those for you. Have good lighting. That's so important that you have good lighting. Most of us, as we age, we tend to need to get up during the night to use the bathroom more than we did when we were younger. And you don't want to be trying to shuffle around in the dark to get to the bathroom. I mentioned our vision is our most important sensory system to help us with our balance. So when you take your vision away or you reduce your vision, you are reducing your most important system in your body to help you with your balance. And if you think about how many of you shower, everybody should be raising your hand that you shower. When you're showering, and if you're washing your hair or your head, and you're probably closing your eyes, you're less stable when you're doing that? Yes. So that's a perfect example to help illustrate how important our vision is to us. So when you're getting up during the night, you want to make sure you have good lighting. Have night lights available. If you're going into another room, make sure that you've got light switches that are where you need them to be able to get lighting that's available for you as you're entering that room or before you enter it. The bathroom is a very high fall risk area for multiple reasons. We often have area rugs that can become slippery. We're dealing with water on slick surfaces. You're getting up and down. You're climbing in and out of showers or in and out of tubs. So you want to look at what are the things in your bathroom that you can do to reduce your fall risk. My mother-in-law, about a month ago, about a month ago, she couldn't get off the toilet, and it was about 3 hours before she had somebody that was able to help her get off the toilet. So what can you do? You can put in grab rails to help you get up. You can do an elevated seat. You can do elevated seats where you can add it to an existing toilet. They're quite inexpensive to do, or have your toilet switched out to one of the what are called the comfort height toilets that are easier to get up off the toilet. Question? Yes, and also, you know, be aware of when you have a method like that of if that sink is wet, do you risk your hand slipping? So making sure that if you are using a method like that, that it's going to be a consistently safe method for you. I mentioned going to somebody's home, and another one of the risks that I found in their home was they had not put in grab bars, and the gentleman had very, very significant mobility challenges and fell regularly. And I went in, and one of their towel bars, which was directly in front of the toilet across the way, and I touched it, and it was very loose. And I said, do you use this to help you get up? And sure enough, he would lean across. Well, towel bars are not a grab bar. They're just held in drywall with a couple of screws, so the risk of grabbing that towel bar would be having it fall off and then falling to the ground. So I suggested if they still wanted to have a quote towel bar in that spot, they could put it in as a grab bar and then they could hang a towel on top of it, leaving room for him to still be able to grab it. So look at those opportunities in your bathroom, in your kitchen area, because we often put area rugs in our kitchen, so that's another place that you can change that. So couple things to think about when you go home and look at is the clutter, the area rugs, having grab bars if you need them. It's fairly easy to have grab bars installed. You can get a handyman if you need to come out and put those in and put them in the high-use places where you're going to need that assistance to get up. Making sure you have in the shower, and there are suction cup type grab bars. Those can work okay. You just want to make sure that they're adhering. Somebody's shaking their head no. Did you have a bad experience with one, or they don't work so well? Yeah. Ideally, you want the type that are screwed into a good secure stud in the wall. That's your best. And then avoiding hazardous activities. Right now, we're in the time of year where generally there are always multiple men that unfortunately end up dying this time of year, usually older men. Any ideas why? Falling off of ladders, putting up Christmas decorations, and then falling off of ladders, taking down Christmas decorations. It's usually men, because it's the men that will go up on the ladder. What happens is oftentimes individuals don't realize that they're starting to have balance impairment until they're in a situation such as being on a ladder, and they've maybe gone up and down ladders thousands and thousands of times in their life and never had a problem. But they go up the ladder one time and vertigo hits. So we have in our inner ear, we have a specialized balance mechanism. It's called our vestibular system. And it's one of the three main systems that we use to help us with our balance. And what that vestibular system does is, particularly when our head is moving back and forth, it helps our body and brain to know the speed with which our head's moving, and that it's our head that's moving and that it's not the world that's moving around us. So it helps kind of bring all of these different things going on around us together and helps our brain sort out what's happening. Well, that system declines with age. Unfortunately, like all the rest of our systems, decline with age, but the vestibular system does too. And so as it gets weaker, there becomes a critical point where doing something like crawling up a ladder suddenly becomes a more hazardous thing to do. And that applies to both men and women, of course, but it's just that generally the men tend to be more the ones that will go out and put the lights up on the house. But with that said, I really want to emphasize, be very, very cautious about climbing up on step stools and step ladders. Make sure if you are using them that you are that you have something to hang on to with your hands to make sure that you are stabilized. And then when we're looking at safety outdoors, look at your environment around your home to make sure that it is set up safely. Are there steps that you have to go up and down to get into your house, maybe from the garage? Sometimes it can just be a small threshold transition from the garage into the house. But if you don't have a rail or if you don't have a grab bar that's installed on the wall, that can be a very challenging hazard for somebody that has balance issues. Looking at how you have your trash set up. So if you have outdoor trash cans that you need to take to the curb, are you doing that in the dark? Maybe you need to transition to doing that during daylight so that you've got full use of your vision to help you navigate that can to it. And what footwear you're using is very important. If you have balance issues, Your footwear is very important. You ideally want to be in good, stable, closed shoes that are not slip-ons with an open heel. Slippers can be a big problem from a footwear standpoint for people that have balance issues. If they're slip-on type of slippers, especially if there's any type of elevation to it, you increase your risk of sliding partially out of that, and then that takes you off balance. And for somebody that has balance issues and maybe has lower body weakness, it doesn't take a lot of being displaced to result in a fall. So that's why the footwear is very important. And then again, not doing hazardous activities. It's a lot less expensive to hire a handyman to help with changing light bulbs, again, than it is to deal with the cost of having a significant injury from a fall. So I want to talk about the physical activity component. So this is the fifth key factor for reducing fall risk, physical activity. The last one here, not because it's the least important, but probably because it's the most important thing that we can do to reduce our fall risk. And this applies at any age. So people that have been sedentary their whole life, as an older adult, if they become more physically active, that can reduce their fall risk. Our bodies are incredibly responsive, which is wonderful. We can develop muscle strength at any age. Somebody can be in their 90s and have never exercised and start doing muscle strengthening exercise and get stronger. And that's the wonderful thing about how responsive our body is. Our muscles are responsive at any age. So there are, when we look at what our muscle capacity is, there's three components of when we talk about muscle performance. There is muscle endurance, muscular endurance, and that's basically the ability for a muscle to sustain activity for a long time. So our heart is a muscle. Our cardiovascular endurance is the ability to be able to walk and do activities without being overly exhausted from maybe just walking a few steps into a building. And so we want to maintain our cardiovascular endurance so that you have the stamina to do activities of daily living, to do hobbies, to do the things that you enjoy doing without becoming overly tired. Because when you become physically tired, you're at a greater risk for fall. You don't have the strength to stay upright. Your attention diminishes when you're tired. And then our muscle strength is the ability of how forcefully a muscle can contract. So when you get up out of a chair, it takes muscle strength. Or you're getting off the toilet, it takes muscle strength to do that. Or to pick up, if you go grocery shopping, to pick up your grocery bags. And people tend to think that, well, just lower body strength is all that's important for balance. But upper body strength and core strength, kind of our midsection strength, is very important for our balance and mobility. Because if you don't have good upper body strength and you go to pick up a half gallon of milk and you don't have good strength to manage that, that can pull your center of gravity off and you don't have the ability to recover from that and have a fall. Our core strength through our midsection is what helps keep us upright and allows us to walk freely and be comfortable. And then when we talk about muscle power, that is how forcefully and quickly a muscle can contract. So if I'm sitting down and I need to get up quickly, not only does that take muscle strength, but it takes muscle power for the muscle to be able to contract quickly. Or if I'm walking and I trip over a crack in the sidewalk and I need to catch myself from falling, I have to move quickly, and again, that's muscle power to do that. Of those components of muscle endurance, muscle strength, and muscle power is what diminishes the most rapidly as we age. So it's important that we maintain muscle power in order to maintain our balance so that we can respond quickly to situations that cause us to be off balance. So muscle strengthening activities, which include improving your muscle power, are very, very important for us as we age. So if somebody says to me, well, I walk, or I swim, or I ride my bike, I say, that's wonderful. Keep doing that. That is helping to maintain your cardiovascular fitness. It's maintaining good range of motion in your joints and your muscles. It's helping with your flexibility. But it's not necessarily going to help maintain your muscle strength and power. It will keep your muscles toned. But to maintain your muscle strength and power, you need to be doing exercises that create an overload on the muscle so that it responds and continues to develop the muscle cells that help your strength. So what does that translate into? That is things like working with dumbbells or working with bands or working with resistance equipment. And don't be afraid of those things. You can do them at any age. I love seeing the things that we have our clients doing at the LiveWell Center that are in their 80s and 90s coming in afraid of doing resistance training exercises, and then once they understand that they can do it and they are capable of doing it, that it's not going to injure them if it's done properly, it's wonderful to see that ability that they're able to maybe gain back some abilities that they thought they had lost forever. Oftentimes we'll have a client will come in and say, I want to be able to get up from the floor. I want to be able to, you know, play with my grandchildren and get down on the floor or get up. And getting up from the floor is a skill. We learn that when we're young. We're not born knowing how to get up from the floor. It's a skill we have to learn. We tend to lose it as we age because we're afraid to get down on the floor. And if you don't use the skill, you lose that skill. So I encourage people, get down on the floor on a regular basis so that you keep that skill of how to get up. Because if you fall, what do you need to do? You need to get up. So you want that skill to be able to get up. Don't be afraid to get down to the floor. And even if it doesn't look pretty when you're getting up, so what? If you can get up, you can get up. That's the important thing that matters. And don't get down on the floor because you've fallen. Get down on the floor because you've chosen to get down to the floor, and then practice getting up. Flexibility and ROM. So ROM is range of motion. So that's just being able to move your joints freely through the full range of motion, and the flexibility of your muscles are very important for our balance and mobility. If my muscles are very tight in the back of my leg, that's going to restrict the swing of my leg as I walk. It's going to restrict my ability to walk up steps. If I'm very tight in my upper body, it makes it harder to reach up to put something in a cabinet or take clothes off. And anytime you have difficulty with doing things like that, that influences your abilities of daily activity and puts you at higher risk for having falls. So stretching remains important to do throughout our life and becomes even more critical as we age. And then balance and mobility. So for people that are experiencing balance or mobility impairments, it's important to do balance and mobility training work specifically. The research has shown that it takes about 50 hours of balance training work to really have a significant difference in improving your balance. So 50 hours, that's you know, where you're looking at multiple months of a couple of hours a week of training. But it can be improved by doing balance-specific activities and mobility-specific activities. So seek those out if you need that kind of help. Question? Yes, everybody should have a regular exercise program, absolutely. And I wasn't saying that swimming is not good. Swimming is an excellent activity. It's particularly good for people that do have arthritis because there's not hard impact involved in it. It maintains wonderful range of motion. It keeps you moving, keeps you flexible, keeps your cardiovascular fitness. What I was saying is that in addition to that, muscle strengthening type of work is very important to help maintain muscle strength. And you may not be able to get back to getting up off the floor. I don't want to be unrealistic, but certainly there are many people that have that ability to be able to do that, where they thought they maybe had lost it, and they, in fact, can get that back. So definitely keep swimming. Very important to do. Keep moving. And that's probably the biggest message of all, is just keep moving. Minimize how much you spend sitting during the day. I have a whole different presentation that I do that talks about the risk of sitting. If there's one key message out of it, is that your risk for death and disability dramatically goes up the more you sit. And generally, as we age, we tend to sit more and more. Some of you may have heard, because it's in the news a lot right now, is that sitting is being called the new smoking. And what that means is that the risks associated with sitting are almost as awful as the risks associated with smoking. So if you are a sitter, if you're on the computer, if you're watching TV, you should be getting up a minimum of 2 minutes for every hour that you sit. A minimum. And it is quite interesting, because there's some very good research that shows that as little as 2 minutes an hour of getting up and moving, if breaking up your sitting time like that, can have some significant health benefits in terms of reducing the risks associated with sitting. No. So the question is laying down better than sitting? No. And in fact, yes, for the most part, yes. It's you want to be up and moving. You want to be up. You need to be using the postural muscles that help maintain us being upright and get off your rear ends. But again, that's a whole different presentation. So what I want to end with is, what are five things that you can do right now? So the first one, COG control. COG means center of gravity. And I think, again, that I think is on your green sheet there. So center of gravity, our belly button area, around our belly button and our hips, is where our center of gravity is. And if you picture a infant toddler that is learning to transition from crawling to walking, and they're falling down repeatedly, what they're learning is to control their center of gravity. That's what's happening when we make that transition from crawling to walking, controlling our center of gravity. And then throughout our life, we're doing all sorts of activities, including walking, that is controlling our center of gravity. How many of you have skied in your life? A lot of you. So a lot of skiers in here. Skiing is huge center of gravity control. Our center of gravity is what keeps us upright, because gravity is constantly working against us, trying to make us fall down to the ground. And so we have learned to control our center of gravity to work against the pull of gravity bringing us to the ground. When you start having balance and mobility challenges, you've really begun to lose a lot of the control of your center of gravity. So in the balance classes that we teach at the LiveWell Center, we do a lot of center of gravity control work. We're trying to retrain the body to do a better job of controlling our center of gravity. So what affects that? What changes us having good control of our center of gravity as we age? Well, it's multiple things. One that's a big contributor is our posture. Because as soon as our posture comes forward, we have changed our center of gravity control. We've brought our center of gravity forward. And in essence, what ends up happening is that causes us to constantly be running, so to speak, to catch up with our center of gravity because it's pulling us forward. The weight of our head as we're rounded forward pulls us off. So we work on posture because the more upright your posture is, the more efficient your body is, and the better center of gravity control that you'll have. So we kind of get people tuned back into their center of gravity so that they are better able to deal with being perturbed, physically perturbed. If you're standing in line at the store and somebody bumps you from behind, if you have good center of gravity control, you're able to better recover from that. So you're relearning a skill that your body is starting to lose. So that's center of gravity control, and I want everybody that's comfortable trying this to try this with me. You might need to, I'm going to be asking you to stand up, and if you're not comfortable with standing up, that's okay, but if you are, stay seated for a moment, but position yourself so that you can stand up. So put your feet flat on the floor. So to use your center of gravity to most effectively stand up, if you think about bringing your nose out over your toes, you bring your nose over your toes and you look forward as you stand up, and then as you sit back down, I'll turn my chair so I can demonstrate this. If I don't control my center of gravity when I sit and I just let my center of gravity control me, right? How much do you see people sit and crash into the chair, or do some of you feel yourself crash into the chair when you sit? So if you control your center of gravity by reversing the nose over the toes, you will be controlled when you sit down. So nose over the toes coming up, eyes are forward. Eyes are forward. I push my hips back because what that's doing is it's putting my balance center right about my belly button right over my feet. So I have control. So when I'm teaching people how to do a squat exercise, which helps you with your leg strength, it's not a very pretty analogy but it works for everybody. If you've ever needed to use an outhouse, nobody wants to sit on an outhouse toilet seat. So what do you have to do? You have to hover over it. If you're upright like this, you can't hover. You're going to be falling in the hole. So to hover, you have to put your rear end back there, right? Like I said, it's not pretty, but you won't forget that. You're going to remember this when you go to sit down next time. You're going to be thinking about that outhouse toilet seat as you squat down and hover over it. So that's a simple one that you can do to help you have more control when you're getting in and out of a chair or off the toilet. And then the stand steady relates to when you do stand up. I already mentioned this previously. Take a moment to make sure that you are not feeling dizzy, that you're stable, especially if you're getting up and you're going to be turning. Stand up, get steady, and then turn, and you'll be less likely to have a fall. Posture. So if everybody would stand up, if you're comfortable, you don't have to stand up, Alice, if it's too much today. So stand with your feet about hip width apart. Just relax your arms at your side. And I want you to sense how your body alignment feels. Does it feel like your ears are aligned over your shoulders? Or are you maybe a bit forward like this with your head? We tend to, as we age, our head starts coming forward. We start having rounding in the upper back. So a simple exercise you can do at home, they're called turtles, and it's where you tuck your chin back in. So you're keeping your chin level with the floor, but you're tucking it back like you're a turtle drawing your head into the shell. And what you're doing is you're strengthening the muscles on the back of the neck here, and that helps to keep the head aligned over the shoulders, which helps with your posture. You want your shoulders aligned right over your hips aligned over your knees and your ankles. So the straighter you are upright, the better your posture and the better your balance is going to be. Find opportunities to practice that. It could be you're standing in line, or you're standing waiting in front of the microwave. You're welcome to sit if you want. It was good, too, because I got you standing up because we've been sitting for almost an hour. Vertical target. This is probably the most important thing I can leave you with as a really simple thing you can start doing to help with your balance. And what that means is the research has shown that when you are standing up, or if you're, if you're getting up out of a chair or you're just standing somewhere, or even most importantly, if you are walking, that if you look forward at a vertical line, and our world is filled with vertical lines, door frames, window frames, picture frames, all make wonderful vertical lines, that stabilizes your vision, and it naturally vertically aligns your body. It improves your posture. It brings the head forward instead of down, looking down towards the ground. So when you are walking, or if you are getting up out of a chair, instead of looking down at the ground, so if you're getting up, you don't want to do this. You don't want to look down, because our body goes where our eyes go. So you're more likely to find yourself continuing right forward into a head plant. So if you look forward at a vertical target, as you bring your nose out over your toes, that's going to make you more stable. And then you're already looking at something that's going to stabilize your vision and help you be stable. If you're walking, and some of you may see this in yourself, is that you're looking down at the ground all of the time, that puts you at a greater risk for falls. People say to me, yeah, but I might trip over something. I have to see what's in front of me, and that's why I'm looking down at the ground. Why does a young person not look down at the ground all the time? They need to see what's out there in front of them too. It's because as we become more fearful of falling as we age, we tend to think that we need to look directly in front of us. But what you need to be doing when you're walking is you are looking out in the direction that you're going, your eyes scanning to see what's out there, what obstacles there are ahead of you. If you see that there is something, let's say there's a curb that you're going to need to step up. You're looking, you see that curb. You may need to take a quick glance down when you get to it. You put your foot on the curb, but when you go to bring the other foot up, looking down at it is not going to help you navigate up that curb. It's going to make it harder. So once you've got your first foot up, as you are moving up that curb or that step or whatever it is you're navigating over, if your eyes are forward on a vertical target, you're going to be much more stable. Okay, that makes sense about the vertical target? So I hear from the balance clients that I work with all the time that using the vertical target is one of the most helpful things for them. And it's a really simple thing that you can start doing the moment you get up out of your chair and start to leave the room here. And then the last one I'll leave you with is called gait variation. So as we start to have balance issues, as you're aging, there's a tendency to have a very limited gait. So you walk slower, you may walk with your feet wider, you may tend to drag your feet on the ground. And as we do that, it narrows our ability to be able to navigate around in all of the unusual environments that we have to navigate in. Because our world is not flat and it's not smooth. It has rocks and it has cobblestones and it has ice where the sprinkler is running at night still in town here, and you step on the sidewalk and it's icy. So we have to navigate through a world that is very uneven and variable. And you want your gait to be adaptable to that. So in our balance classes, balance and mobility classes, we do all sorts of different walking patterns. We do wide walking. We do narrow walking. We do sidestepping. So if you go to church or you go to the theater and you're having to step down the aisle, you can do so with confidence and not feel like you're going to fall or that you don't want to go to the theater anymore because you don't feel comfortable doing that type of thing. So you want to maintain a flexible, adaptable gait. So you can go home and you can do things like if you're walking down your hallway, do wide walking, do high knee stepping, do sidestepping, do what I call the wedding march. One long stride, one short stride, do the other leg. The more you keep your gait flexible and adaptable like that, the more prepared your body is to handle the variable environment that we have to navigate around in. So I'll leave you with this quote from Jack LaLanne, who lived well into his 90s and was working out a couple of hours a day, up almost until the day that he died. Don't care how old I live. I just want to be living while I am living. Living a good life, ideally, and a good functional one. The handouts that are available, some of you may have already grabbed, and then if not, they're on the back table. There's a green sheet that summarizes all of the key things that I talked about today. There's kind of a pink sheet that has five exercises that are lower body strengthening exercises that use your body weight that you can do at home. I have a list of some website resources that can provide you more information. I have the white sheet is, or one of the white sheets, has a list of our free active aging lectures that we offer every Friday at the LiveWell Center. It has, it's Fridays at 10, and at the bottom of the sheet it has the location and the time listed, and it has the topics. Alice, I think do you attend the active aging lectures? Yeah, that's, I think, where I recognize you from. I've done a couple of lectures there before. So different topics. You don't have to register. It's just if a topic of interest to you, you can attend. I have a schedule of our LiveWell Center classes. We are open Monday through Saturday. On the back side of it, it describes the different classes that we offer. These are small group classes that are for midlife and older adults only, and we do balance and mobility classes. I already mentioned our Learning Hub, where we have a bunch of free services that are available, and this lists those services. And then the last one I have is just a brochure that describes the assessments and all of the services that we have at the LiveWell Center. So I thank you for your time today and some good questions along the way. If there's any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. So thank you.